take advantage of it, and you listen to Sixth Sense Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Sixth Sense Podcast. It's a mild, overcast, rainy day here in the nation's capital. Joining me in studios is the affable Grant Creech from the Team 1200. Creech, what's up, man?
Just chilling, man. I haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, you've been away.
Yeah, it was down in Antigua. It was actually Antigua, as the local call it. Unbelievable time.
Good stuff.
Good stuff, but missed this stuff. Let's get right into it.
Yeah, you missed a number of losses.
Yeah, I did.
Followed by two wins in the Sunshine State. But yeah, Ottawa's meddling away. They're in, I believe, seventh place in the Eastern Conference right now. They have a nice little cushion on Toronto and Washington, but same old ho-hum. But it looks good. I think with 22 games left to play, Ottawa has 68 points, so they have to go slightly above 500 to get in. So it looks like they're going to do it. Cross your fingers. But yeah, everything's going well. The fans seem to be enjoying the experience, and it's a fun time of year for everybody.
How can you not be enjoying it, even if they don't end up finishing above that number eight, that final playoff spot? They've definitely overachieved this year from all the other expectations, but it's great. And of course, we got to mention that famous three words everyone's talking about right now: games in hand. Everyone behind them has a few.
And I don't think that changes for the rest of the month. I believe even through, like, I think it's the month of March where a lot of the teams catch up. I think Ottawa has 16 games in March, and I believe teams like Washington have upwards of 19.
Even this game this week a little bit? Because Sens don't play for 4 days.
Yeah, it's not even that extensive. I think maybe Washington has two games during this week. I think Toronto's the same way. Winnipeg has two games as well. So there's nothing. No teams are going to catch them in the next week or two anyway. So
looking good, though.
Oh, yeah.
Again, finally.
But it's something we'll be talking about, I'm sure, for the next few weeks. So anyway, so getting back to Ottawa's record of late, they've won two games in Florida. The first line's rolling. Jason Spezza has got like 13 points in his last five games. Bobby Butler's career has a pulse. He's always been a second half performer.
That's because didn't he start in the second half last year?
But yeah, he's got, I think, 6 points in his last three or four games now. So he's doing quite well. Mind you, a couple secondary assists in there as well, but beggars can't be choosers.
His goal was beautiful last night, eh?
Yeah, no.
By all three guys on that line.
Yeah, no, that line's cruising. They had some contributions from unexpected players like Kasper Stogovans. Brian Lee had two assists. Jimmy O'Brien.
Did you see that windmill
the forgotten
celebration?
Prospect. Yeah. Act like you've done it before, Jimmy.
Celebrate like he's not going to score again there. Jimmy O'Brien doing the Daniel Briere. Yeah, good for Jimmy O'Brien. Stuck it out. Worked hard.
He's battling. Paul McLean seems to love him. He's become a cog on the penalty kill, sorry. And Zenon Konopka has actually been a healthy scratch for the last few games in the press box.
Somebody's he's got to be taking someone's spot, right?
Yeah, and Matt Carkner's another one who's joining Konopka up there. A lot of toughness in the press box.
Like Brian Lee's game, making that first pass, two assists last night.
Well, to credit Brian Lee, at least he can skate. One of the biggest causes of concern for me over the past few weeks has been the horrendously bad team speed.
You've been talking about that for, I'd say, a good month.
Yeah, but Jared Cowan's now on the bottom pairing. He's been awful for at least since, I think it was January 13th, I was writing about it on the website.
I think he's been bad for a while. Like, not just bad, but he's gone through...
He's gone through a lull.
Yeah,
because December, he was unbelievable.
Oh, he raised the bar so high for himself as a rookie player that everyone came to expect.
Do you think that's part of the problem?
Yeah, I think he's just going through his rookie year.
Who is the Calder favorite right now? Adam Henrique?
When's Nugent Hopkins supposed to be back?
I don't know.
It's got to be, I think it's his right now, unless Nugent Hopkins, I'm not sure what the timetable for Nugent Hopkins is.
Larson?
He's had a good season, playing in the toughest position to come into the league at, but Henrique playing on that top line.
It's an underwhelming class, though. It is. It's a really underwhelming class. And Cody Hodgins picked it up of late as well, but
He's not getting all the minutes either. He's playing down that depth chart, but he is playing like that's a stacked team.
But at the same time, he is playing against inferior competition too, right? Like most of the opposition's best forwards and defensemen are going to be playing against their top two lines, so Cody Hodgins picking up the slack on the third line. It's always been that bad back that's kind of limited his progression as a player, but it's nice to see him develop, and Vancouver has Jordan Schrader in the minors too. So they have some pieces there. It'd be interesting to see what they do at the deadline.
They have backup goaltender right now, too, that they might be able to trade. I don't see that happening. I think they're going to go with both guys for the playoff run.
They'd have to, right? Because if Luongo doesn't bring it, that team's in trouble.
Yeah. I'd say the earliest they move Snyder's offseason.
Or maybe if there's a CBA redone, amnesty clause, that'll be interesting, too.
Maybe they're banking on that. I think they were banking on that when that whole Kovalchuk original contract came up.
Okay. So here's a question for you. If you're a franchise like Ottawa that has been fiscally responsible for the most part, there was a Danny Heatley bonus paid on July 1st way back.
Another one coming up with Spezza.
Yeah, that's true, too. But if you're a fiscally responsible owner, would you be pissed that a number of your competitors could possibly be afforded the luxury of having this amnesty clause potentially being brought in?
Whatever. Look at what teams are doing now. Like, look at the Rangers are bearing guys in the minors. Something's going to happen. Owners are going to find ways around.
To circumvent the cap, you mean?
I know what you're saying. Maybe for a really small market team, you'd be a little upset where somebody gets a free pass on a player like, I don't know, guys that you just mentioned, Wade Redden, John Avery, Roberto Luongo, Jeff Carter.
Jeff Carter. He's not even making that much in terms of a cap hit. It's only a little over five.
But 10 years, though.
Yeah, this is the first year of an 11-year deal. That's a bit scary. But you took on the contract. You bear the burden of it. You should be punished for it.
Oh, I agree. I completely agree with you. But what are you going to do?
Well, I think someone kicked out the suggestion that if you amnesty a player under the new CBA, a potential penalty that could be imposed on this team is the forfeiture of a draft pick. Interesting thought.
I'd say that would be closest to the fair thing you could do that I can think of right now. I haven't really sat down and thought about.
Yeah, well, we're way off topic. This is even.
No,
we're
this
just throwing
good.
This out there, though.
This is good. I hadn't really thought about that in the last. Like, thought about appropriate penalties for if you're able to get rid of a player like that. I'm not sure, but that sounds good. Well, I don't know how high you'd want it. Maybe not a first-round draft pick, but maybe a second-round draft pick.
Maybe it depends on how big the contract is.
That's
or how much money's owed. Maybe they can do it like a restricted free agent, like they have those levels of payment, right? Could be interesting. Sliding
scale.
That's a good
idea. That's smart.
I don't know. Could be interesting. Something to look at moving forward in the future.
It would be nice. It would be nice to handcuff the GMs a little bit, make them make a decision in case instead of just being able to just completely get rid of a guy like Roberto Luongo.
Right, because that's where rich teams have the financial means to get that edge in competition, right? They can afford to make a mistake on a free agent, whereas a team like a Nashville or a Minnesota or an Ottawa can't really afford to bury someone of that nature in the minors.
You think they're going to miss any games next year?
I hope not. I really, really hope not. But some people seem to be more optimistic than others. And yeah, to be honest, I'm not too concerned yet because I'm so caught up in this Ottawa Senators playoff race that I'm not even really looking that far ahead. But yeah, it's not something that's really pertinent right now for me, at least. I don't know about you.
I'm on the same page. I just keep you keep reading about it. Every time you pick up an article of the Hockey News or something, you kind of go down that way.
Everybody's afraid of Donald Fear.
Let's get to Jason Spezza.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Jason Spezza? Five games.
Yeah. He's bringing it. The team goes as he goes.
But previous six games, 0 points for Jason Spezza.
Yeah.
There you go.
His first line wasn't going, though. They were playing him they were essentially juggling his line mates seemingly every game. The one constant in the Senators' lineup was their second line of Turris, Alfredson, and for the most part, it was Foligno. I think they threw in Eric Condra once in a while. But yeah, it seems like they've been working the pairings. They've paired off like two guys per line, essentially. But they couldn't find anyone to get McCulloch or Spezza going. And Bobby Butler was inserted, I think, 3 games ago on Ottawa's top line after being banished to the press box for a number of games. And he's come back and he's put up a fair number of points. And it's going to be interesting to see as we approach the NHL trade deadline what Ottawa's going to do if they feel that there's an alternative out there on the market that they could bring in to augment one of Ottawa's top two lines. Because Bobby Butler is starting to play well. And there are a number of probably inexpensive guys who you might do a double take of if Brian Murray kind of looks in their direction. I'm not going to mention any names, Dustin Penner. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do because Brian Murray's already gone on the record and said that he wants to look for another forward. What do you think? How do you feel about this?
I don't like them getting another forward until the summer.
You're like me. You're a lot like me in the sense that I'm more looking forward to the forwards that they could potentially bring in the offseason when they can look at the roster. Yeah, even well.
And I'm not saying that I'm hoping I'm throwing my hitching my wagon to that train.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening. That's
It's probably completely unrealistic to put all your eggs in the free agent basket though, right?
Yeah, but I think I'd like to see them wait it out. They might not make the playoffs this year, and it'll be even worse if they make a trade and get rid of one of their prospects that they have in the system that they've loaded up these last couple of years, or get rid of a pick for some rental player who may or may not push you over the top. Like, who are you thinking they'd target as a top six forward at the deadline?
Well, this is the funny thing, because I think it was the Tampa game. Brian Lawton, during the first intermission of the Hockey Central panel, mentioned three names. Alex Hemsky.
Nope.
Dustin Penner.
Nope.
Mike Knubel. George McPhee came out today and said Mike Knubel's not on the market. He's not going to trade him. He's staying in town. Alex Hemsky. I don't know. If you're a paid analyst, why would you even throw out a name like Alex Hemsky? A, he's going to cost you a lot in terms of assets that you have to give up to acquire him. B, ownership and management have already come out and said repeatedly that they're not going to mortgage the future to bring in a rental player, which is essentially what Hemsky is. The fuck, man?
How long Brian Lawton have a GM job?
Yeah, fair point.
Not trying to shit on him either, but that was... I don't think Hemsky's going to be traded to anyone this year. I don't think the Oilers will get much for him.
You don't think so?
Maybe they'll re-sign him to a short-term
contract. He's a skill player. I think he's been in the league long enough where teams know what he brings to the table, though.
I don't like Alex Hemsky. I really wish our internet was working here. Do you have the internet? Do you have the Ethernet cable going? Look up his numbers.
You want career numbers?
I want his career numbers. I bet you for sure he's under a point a game.
He has played for some really bad Oilers teams, though, over the past number of years.
People are talking about this guy every, like, last deadline when there was 1 year left on his contract. They were talking Pittsburgh and stuff. They were talking, like, he's an 80, like, a point-per-game player, difference maker, 80 points.
I always saw him as kind of like a very poor man's Hossa. 533 games, 419 points. He has 118 goals. His best season in terms of production was 2008-2009. He had 23 goals and 66 points. Sorry, he had 71 points the year before.
What's he have right now this year?
4 goals, 24 points.
Yeah, and how many games? Like 40? Okay. Yeah.
There are obviously injury concerns with him.
Yeah, for sure. He's a good player, and I don't like the idea of the Senators bringing him in, and I just don't see him being traded because he's had such a poor season and such an injury-prone season that maybe he signs another one-year deal in Edmonton. Because let's be honest, they don't really have their second line figured out. This whole Sam Gagne and everything. They have their future first line set for years to come, but maybe they give Hemsky a 1 year deal and he comes out and stays healthy, puts up some points, and they can trade him for a better package next year. What are you gonna get for Alex Hemsky this year?
And considering the guys who are getting dealt tonight.
I look stupid now.
Yeah, no, but like
no, you're
Dominic,
right.
Dominic Moore is the perennial deadline guy. Like, last season I laughed at Pierre Gauthier it was 2 seasons ago where I laughed at Pierre Gauthier for giving up a second round pick to get this guy from Buffalo, and then he goes to Tampa Bay the next year for a second round pick, I believe, and then this year he is going to San Jose for a second round pick. And it's Minnesota's pick, so I believe it's going to be, you know, top 12 probably in the second round.
They keep falling.
Yeah, which they look to do. So it's kind of mind-boggling what the market is for some of these rental players.
Well, I don't understand this. I'm not sure if it's
he's a playoff warrior.
No, but is Michael Hanzus, is he injured right now?
To be honest, I'm not sure.
Because isn't he their third-line center?
Yeah,
their
he's a PK good one. Guy? He's a very good one.
I like Michael Hanzus. I was probably on this show at the beginning of the season saying that my favorite moves were the Hanzus, White, and
you're a bit biased, Vandermeer, though, because you liked his long hair.
I appreciate the flow, but it was dirty. But no, I liked those moves San Jose made. And what are they? Is Dominic Moore going to be, I guess, playing on their third and fourth line?
The way that San Jose is operating their team right now, it strikes me as an organization that's their window's closing. Because the number of draft picks and prospects that they've moved out of their system over the past season and a half, 2 seasons, is crazy. I don't know what their pipeline is. I think Hockey Prospect has ranked it as one of the worst, one of the top five worst in the NHL right now. So they don't. There's not a huge margin for error. So if their team gets older and they just stay the same and they keep that complacent core together, it reminds me of Ottawa from like a number of years ago under the Muckler years, where it's starting to, like, the cupboard's getting thin. If you don't win soon, you might be toast.
Absolutely. Dan Boyle's getting up there.
Joe Thornton's getting up there. Patty Marleau. Yeah.
Martin Havlat isn't, he's not the most healthy guy.
No, I don't even think he's played yet.
Since his injury, no.
So that's a team with a lot of red flags. Mind you, they're a very skilled team. They have some great players. And do they have the goaltending to take them to the next level? We'll see.
He's won a cup.
But they have to win soon. That window keeps getting smaller and smaller every year.
No, I agree. I agree that that's closing for sure. They gave up a lot in those Minnesota deals also in terms of future prospects.
All right. I asked a number of readers, our people who follow the account, our Twitter account, and I asked them, all right, we're jumping in for a podcast. What kind of questions do you want us to hit on? And we had a few responses. One person, Pomatic, wanted us to answer the question of, does Ottawa's success destroy whatever 3-year rebuild was dreamed up?
I'd say it doesn't hurt it unless they make some stupid decisions at the deadline this year.
So you're saying it remains to be seen.
If these young guys can get a taste of the playoffs, I think that only helps. As long as they don't make some trade for a rental player.
Which goes with everything that the organization's been saying, at least publicly, right? Like, if they're going to make a deal, it'll be of the Kyle Turris nature, where they're giving up assets to bring in another young piece that will be with the team for a number of years. It'd be heartbreaking to see them kind of actually trade for a rental. I couldn't fathom that situation, especially after everything that they've been saying. I think there'd be a huge public backlash against that, because it's just not very truthful.
I don't see the Maurice.
If they traded for Dustin Penner, would you be upset?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Dustin Penner.
Pancakes, man. You could have a pancake party here in Ottawa. No?
I'd go to that pancake if there's some fruit in it, but the not only for thing, any autographs.
In fairness to Penner, the only thing that I could say for that guy is that he would probably add something to one of the power play units, because I like Chris Neal as a hockey player. I think he has some utility as a third line grinder and efficient forechecker. And he brings some leadership, the intangibles. That,
some big hits.
Yeah. I don't hate Chris Neal on the power play. I hate it.
We've discussed this.
Yeah, ad nauseum. We've discussed this ad nauseum, and I cannot stand it for the life of me. But I think Dustin Penner's a guy who could replace Chris Neal in front of the net.
Same big score body, those, better hands.
Yeah. Kind of like a Ryan Smith dynamic to your power play.
Unless they were giving up peanuts.
Yeah, but even then, like, if you play Dustin Penner on a fourth line, you're probably going to have to scratch and affect the penalty killer in Kasper's Dagovins or a Jim O'Brien, or if he gets healthy, a Jesse Winchester or a Kanapka.
Problem dressing Penner instead of Jesse Winchester.
That's kind of a sad reflection on Dustin Penner's career. I think Jesse Winchester has how many goals in his career? Dustin Penner?
Stanley Cup ring. But yeah. Still, at this point.
But he's kind of a Murray guy, right? Because the organization tried to get him in the Danny
Sounds
Healy,
like
the vetoed Danny Healy. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they inquired on a number of these guys just to see.
As long as they're not giving up too much.
What's too much? What would you say is too much for Dustin Penner? A fourth round pick? A Bobby Butler? Would you trade Butler straight up?
I'd say I wouldn't want to go any higher than a third without thinking about it. If they give up a third, I'd be like, oh, no, that's fine. I'd be okay with that. A second, I'd have to think about that.
Oh, I wouldn't do a second. That's crazy. Yeah. They still have, but yeah, they have 2 third-round picks. One of them is the Nashville pick, and then they have their own. But I don't think I'd even do a third. It's not worth it. Where's he going to play? He's an even strength liability. I think my favorite quote of the past week was Sutter in LA, the new coach, telling him that if he's going to play, he has to bust his ass. Has Dustin Penner ever busted his ass?
Just eating breakfast. He grows a mean playoff beard, too.
Not a road I would want to go down. But if we're talking about Ottawa's success, you mentioned right off the top, if you're looking at the success of Ottawa's young players and the experience that they can get from a nice playoff run, I don't think there's actually too many guys on Ottawa's current roster that don't have NHL playoff experience. But so, like, if we're talking a 3-year rebuild, which of the organizations actually kind of acknowledge saying, yeah, we had a 3-year plan, everything's kind of accelerated a little bit because the team's having success,
and let's be honest, everyone had career worst years last year,
right? But I think the question that Pomatic was asking is whether or not Ottawa is in a position where they should philosophically want to keep a Filip Kuba or a Sergei Gonchar and give this team the best chance to win in the postseason, give those guys maybe a little bit of playoff success to build off of and bring to the table in future years, is it worth it? It's a weird balance, right? It's a weird dynamic because on one hand, you want your guys to have success. You want them to learn how to win in the playoffs. But at the same time, Filip Kuba and Sergei Gonchar probably aren't going to be here in a year or 2 years.
I don't think I'd trade Filip Kuba at the deadline.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the offer.
I'd assume the best offer you'd get is second-round pick for Filip Kuba.
Nick Grossman was dealt tonight for a second and a third. He plays 19 minutes a night. Five assists on the season.
Different role, though.
Sure. And Filip Kuba, he has the luxury of playing with Erik Karlsson, who Karlsson has played effectively with this season. But he plays 23 minutes a night. He averages 23 minutes a night, sorry. He's having what should be considered a great season by every Sens fan who's watched this team throughout the course of the year. If some team offered a first-round pick for Filip Kuba,
absolutely,
you have to do it.
I don't think that's going to be offered, though.
Sergei Gonchar. What? I don't know. What's the tipping point for Sergei Gonchar?
Sergei Gonchar, that's a little bit different because he has another year at, what, 5.5 cap hit? Is that
right.
What it is? So that's a little different. That would be nice to get that off the books for next year. But still, what message are you
maybe
sending
you
to your team?
Maybe you can if there's an amnesty clause. That's probably the only guy you'd look at. But yeah, no.
What message are you
point.
Sending to your team if you trade a guy like that heading into the playoffs and you're sitting in 7th, 8th, 9th?
Yeah. Well, that's a human element, right? We've talked about this last podcast too. There, like Ian Mendes, when he was on, mentioned this as well. He probably wouldn't trade Kuba. Unless the team was out of the spot, but I mean,
or if you receive
at some
an
point,
offer that you can't,
yeah. But
no
at some point, do you look at the standings and you say, "All right, we're playing Boston or New York. Boston's had our number probably for the past 5 years. You know what? Forever. I can't remember the last time Ottawa had like a winning record against Boston in one season.
How many losses does Tim Thomas have against Ottawa in the last like 4 years? One.
Yeah, I hate that guy. But it raises an interesting question. Do you take your strength of the opponent into consideration? Because if you play Florida in the first round, you stand a very good chance of winning. Or do you just take the mindset in that's saying, no, we don't have a problem letting Filip Kuba walk?
So if you're
is it worth a second-round pick? Because that's
no,
essentially that's what
so.
You're asking yourself. Do you give up your chance of success for a second-round pick?
I wouldn't. It's a second-round pick.
What if you traded Filip Kuba for a second-round pick and then you sent a lesser player or prospect to another organization to bring in another defenseman who may not be as good as Filip Kuba?
That's where I was going to go, is who comes into your lineup in place of Filip Kuba if you trade him for a second?
I don't know.
And if you're in a playoff spot.
I don't think that person is in the organization right now. I think it's completely unrealistic and a little bit irrational to assume that a guy like Mark Borowiecki or a Patrick Wierkocz can step into this team's top four in the next, I don't know, two years. I don't know if Borowiecki profiles
I'm not even talking about
that.
Kuba's position as a number
right.
two defenseman.
No,
on
but
team.
He's just eating 23 minutes a
who's
night.
Who's coming in that top six? Who's coming in the top six? And who's going to take the rest of those minutes? Where are you going to spread them around?
Mm-hmm.
You can't trade Filip Kuba without...
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem. Jared Cowan's not playing well. He'd be one candidate. I'd say, all right, bump up his minutes. But he's struggled since December. He's struggled mightily. So what do you do? Chris Phillips is now playing top 4 minutes with Sergei Gonchar. You almost have to. Brian Murray came out and he said, we like the defense. We're going to add a forward. But you look at this defensive core as a collective and you say, all right, Erik Karlsson's 21. Jerry Cowan's 20. Erik Karlsson's probably going to be making a good chunk of change next season. Jared Cowan's still a rookie. He's having his ups and downs. Beyond that, the rest of the guys are old or just not very talented. Brian Lee's not very good, although he's under team control for the next, I think, 3 years, I believe. Matt Carpenter's 31, unrestricted free agent. Chris Phillips is 33, regressing. Sergei Gonchar is 37, past the prime years of his career. Filip Kuba,
35.
UFA, 35. Where's this team's future?
I think they pick up someone in the offseason.
They almost have to. Or they...
I know where you're going.
Well, they'd have to do something or draft a guy in the first round of this year's draft. It's going to be interesting because Brian Murray likes this team's blue line. But I just don't see... Maybe it's... Nobody asked him whether it was a short-term perspective or like a long-term future look. But I don't see a lot of depth there right now. and it'll be interesting to see how they address or resolve this issue moving forward. What would you like to see them do?
On the blue line?
Yeah.
Add a guy around $2-3 million in the offseason, depending on who you can get. We've talked about the Shea Weber possibility.
Yeah, we've kicked that around. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Ryan Suter. Because if he leaves, I can't envision Shea Weber wanting to stay. Because without his defensive partner, that team has, I think it stands a difficult chance of competing in the NHL. At least for a cup. Sorry, I should say for a cup. He'd be a guy I'd look at targeting, assuming that you could actually get like a window of opportunity to sign into a long-term extension. But
how good would he look with Erik Karlsson in the top pairing?
But that would be the enticement, right? I think that's the one aspect of any future negotiations that Ottawa has with a free agent, even though I think it's kind of naive to assume that guys will want to come here, all dollars being equal in the offseason. It's just free agency kind of scares me because I think Brian Murray has a track record for overpaying guys. Usually they're name guys.
That's why you get someone under the radar.
Like a Jason Garrison? He's going to be like widely looked at. I think there are three guys. There's Suter, there's Garrison, there's Nick Grossman. You take a run at those three guys and see what happens?
There's trades.
That's a thing. But this comes back to the whole philosophy. Like, are you rebuilding or not? Because if you have an opportunity to trade a guy like Philip Kuba for a young prospect, player, what have you, that's just more ammo for this offseason when you can actually try and package that with more stuff that you've accumulated over the past three seasons and try and get that young player who can put this team over the top. It's difficult, man. You have to weigh all these considerations. It's unenviable, man.
Nobody has the answers except for the Murray brothers of what they're planning, what they're thinking.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to get a little insight as to what their plan is.
They'll have to improve the blue line next year.
Blue line in top six. If they can add a winger or they can upgrade one of their current wingers, that would be unbelievable.
I think somebody's going to have to be dealt or released.
Right.
You think
Mark
Zibanejad has a chance?
Yep. Top nine for sure.
Silverberg?
Yep, for sure. They said he was ready this year, and he's tearing it up in the Swedish Elite League. Well, you figure a guy like Greening or Foligno or Condra. Because they have pieces they can move. I don't know how attractive they are, but maybe they can package something together.
They'll figure it out. I don't like the idea of moving Kuba unless you're to get something that would blow your socks off.
Would you sign him? That was another one of the questions. Who asked that? Hold on a second. I will bring it up.
As you look for who asked the question, I'll start to kind of answer and then let you go. I don't know, maybe for a year, nothing long-term, nothing more than 2 years.
Another Matt Stevenson question. What should they do with Kuba? I can't see them trading him unless there is a stupid offer. Would you sign him for more than 1 year? Assuming that he even wants to come back.
I think you could get Kuba at a reasonable price. But
this is his last crack at free agency as well, right? You have to weigh that as well. Does he want to come here for cheap?
Not that he's going to be giving us a huge hometown discount. I just don't think there's going to be tons of offers thrown at him.
He's playing 23 minutes a night on the team's top pairing.
He'll make some money, but he's not going to be making
big money. He's played for a number of teams. Like, John Tortorella has a soft spot for him, allegedly. I would hate to see this organization kind of get in that position where they were 2 years ago, where they were kind of, well, they re-signed him.
on deadline day.
But this was a team that at the time couldn't really accept their fate. Like, they were a team on the decline. They couldn't accept it or at least acknowledge it, see the warning signs and say, all right, our prospect system's kind of barren. We should flip them now, sell high, get whatever we can, and then rebuild. So now that they're in this position to rebuild, it's really, really going to be interesting to see what they do. I think Brian Murray at some point probably has had to gauge the market to see what he could get for a guy like Gonchar for Kuba. If the market's not there, it's not there. That's fine. You keep them. But if there's a huge home run deal to be had, why not?
Oh, I completely agree. If he gets some ridiculous offer for Philip Kuba, I'm okay with. They're also going to have to make another deal, though, a separate deal. Maybe move a Butler or a Foligno and somebody just turn the lights off on us in the studio.
Very romantic.
but they'd have to make a separate deal to bring another defenseman. There's no way that they can trade a Kuba and still battle for a playoff position.
But to follow up that point, last season, deadline, the 2 weeks leading up to it, Ottawa flipped Chris Kelly, Mike Fisher, Alexei Kovalev. Guess what happened to the team?
look at the guys that they had to jump into those spots, though.
Oh, that's the thing. They had the replacement level players.
They don't have that.
At a fraction of the cost. No. No, that's true. And they had the chemistry thing.
As much as we like some
of
the guys in Bingo, there's no one.
You like guys in Bingo?
Potentially in the future. I don't mean right now.
Oh,
put a Borowiecki in a few years.
I can't even see. It's gone pitch dark in here, and I can't see. So we've talked about the Senators for a while now, about the whole philosophy as we approach the NHL trade deadline. But one thing we haven't really hit on is the whole Rick Nash conundrum.
Rick Nash, Jeff Carter.
Where is Rick Nash going? And why is he getting dealt before the deadline?
You think he's getting dealt? You think he's 100% getting dealt before the deadline?
Isn't it? It's such a PR disaster at this point for the Blue Jackets. They're kind of forced into dealing him now, aren't you?
I believe he's getting dealt for sure.
Because he's already submitted his team, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Once you've gone...
Nobody knows who's on this mystery list of teams, but we're assuming it's Boston, LA, San Jose...
Los Angeles,
and the Leafs.
Hometown.
We assume.
What about
Assume.
Did you mention Vancouver there?
No, Vancouver hasn't been confirmed. It's all speculation. There's nothing confirmed.
You just guess.
We just know he submitted a list.
He's in position to make
he's
a cup drive.
He submitted the list. That's all we know. But people are going to milk this all the way to the deadline. Vancouver, I think, could possibly be a logical fit.
I don't think they have the cap space.
Well, that's the problem. They'd have to move probably a Keith Ballard. I don't know who would take them off their hands. He's a seventh defenseman making, I think, what, 4.2? Close to, I think. But, that's an interesting situation. You figured the asking price would be a Cody Hodgson plus...
If he was Vancouver, Corey Schneider. You need goaltending.
Tanev, I think, is another name being thrown out there. Maybe even a Jordan Trader, possibly.
I'd say Schneider, a young prospect or player that they already have going right now.
Maybe Mason Raymond.
What about Alex Burrows? Not making too much coin either.
He's such a key cog in Vancouver. I can't see.
Oh, I'm just saying the asking price.
Yeah, but he's not a first line player. Like, how good is that guy? If you're Scott Harrison, why do you move him now? Other than the fact that it's a PR disaster.
And that's why I'm not sure if he'll be dealt by the deadline. And also, is Scott Harrison going to be the GM next year? Are they going to let him decide the fate of this franchise? We were having the same discussion with the Senators last year.
Yeah.
Except for it wasn't as big of a disaster.
Players that Ottawa was selling, they weren't that caliber of player. Like, Mike Fisher's a good player. Chris Kelly's a fine player.
Oh, and I agree. I meant more
but like
from
getting,
a...
as we've seen with Dominic Moore, it's easy to get a second or a third round pick for some of these guys. Yeah. Or a seventh round pick for Alexei Kovalev.
More from a point of view where we were discussing whether or not Brian Murray should be in charge of making this rebuild.
Right.
But I don't know. Rick Nash, they have the All-Star game next year. It's going to go to the All-Star game for the Columbus Blue Jackets. They trade Rick Nash.
Jeff Carter. Fetter Tootin.
I think Jeff Carter's gone at the deadline.
Who would take that contract? 11 years, 5.2.
LA?
That's a lot of money. And he's a bit of a... He's renowned as a bit of a loose cannon, right? Or at least a partier.
He's good buddies in LA.
Oh, he's good buddies with Mike Richards.
They have no wingers there. Well, I love Dustin Brown, but aside from that, they don't really have a top six.
No, there's not a lot.
They have Dustin Penner.
They can't score. I think they're scoring like 1.5 goals a game.
They need a winger. They need someone to play with either Richards or Kopitar and spread it around. They need someone else. I know Jeff Carter's.
I think Ted Nolan's kid was playing with Mike Richards the other night. It's awful. That's an organization that's drafted a lot of like top. They've had those high draft picks, and what's become of them? Like Colton Tubert's in Edmonton.
Not really playing.
Oscar Möller's back in Sweden.
Thomas Hickey hasn't played yet.
Thomas Hickey's starting to look like a Brian Lee, and it's kind of a disaster. So Nash.
It'll be exciting to see him get moved. That'll make for a great deadline day if Rick Nash gets moved.
I bet you he doesn't get moved, and deadline will be the biggest waste of time.
Scheduled, what, 8-5 on TSN?
This is how bad deadline day is shaping up to be. Andy Sutton was one of the like the most highly touted commodities to be moved on the blue line. Andy Sutton. I thought that guy was washed up like 2 years ago when he came to Ottawa.
He was flying hip checks?
The best thing that guy did all season with Ottawa was hit Jordan Leopold in the postseason. Even then, that completely changed the complexion of that whole series. As soon as that happened, they hated us. We were fine. They didn't hate us at all. They were, you know, Pittsburgh was just kind of coasting through the series, just going through the motions. Everything's ho-hum. And then as soon as that happened, they hated us.
That was tough, especially being up 3 in that game 6.
I was there. It was heartbreaking, man. Heartbreaking.
Getting sad thinking about it.
And LeClaire.
Oh, God. He had beautiful pads, though, eh?
He did.
Sick pads.
He did.
The stripes going down.
It's not often you can use the word beautiful in a sentence with Pascal LeClaire, but...
His filthy pads to go along with his filthy groin. Poor Pascal.
What do you think is more shredded these days, his groin or his confidence?
He's still around. It's got to be.
Well, you've probably seen him around Scotiabank Place.
I haven't seen him.
No? I've seen him once. And I had to do a double take. Pascal, what are you doing here?
What's he doing, French radio?
No. There's some stipulation with the CBA wherein if a player gets hurt playing for your team and the following season, if his contract runs out and he's still not healthy, the team that he played for has to kind of care for him and provide him with medical coverage, I suppose.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Well, if a guy has a concussion or something, right?
I'd like to see him get another shot as a backup or like a Brian Elliott type deal, two-way contract, if his groin is ever...
We talked to Justin Goldman from thegoalieguild.com, and he was saying that he plays such a reckless style that it just makes him so susceptible to injuries. And until he learns to get away from that style, that he's just going to make himself open to like future injury. It's just one of those things where he plays such an aggressive style where you know how he plays like that flashy, he tries to make the big recovery save.
Well, he's very athletic and he's a small guy.
And he relies on that, right? So it's just until he learns to play the angles a little bit better and just rely on...
In the first save.
Yeah, exactly. And
we just ended up on Pascal LeClaire talking about trade deadline day. That's fun.
Good trades. He was a deadline day acquisition.
So was Robin Lehner.
Yes. People forget that, though. The one thing that we haven't hit on thus far on the podcast, Jason Spezza is second in the league in scoring.
Oh, man. How did we not notice that? He has 63 points. And Stamkos and Giroux both have only played about like 50 games. I'm trying not to take anything away from the Spez dispenser.
I was hoping to get him on the podcast tonight. I sent him an email. It was kind of like last-minute notice, but I sent James Gordon...
I thought you were going to say Reno Spezza.
No, Reno Spezza would be fantastic. Yeah, Reno Spezza would be fantastic to have from this latest dad's trip with the Senators. But no, I was hoping to have James Gordon on tonight. I sent him an email late before we got in the studios because the guest that I had previously booked had to bail last minute, which is fine. It happens.
Happens.
Yeah, I was hoping to have him on because he kicked around the idea. And Francois and I had kicked on this idea a couple months ago when Ottawa was rolling. And Jason Spezza was fifth in scoring in the league at the time. And we said, you know, if Spezza keeps us up and the team finishes in the playoffs at a reasonable seed, does he merit Hart Trophy consideration? And James Gordon asked, after the Tampa Bay, should he be in the conversation? Why not? If he's second in the league in scoring, he's staying healthy. As the team goes, he goes. To me, it makes sense.
On a team that was supposed to finish
maybe not
last,
win it, but
in the conversation.
At least be considered.
I think you have to put up some more goals. What does he have, 23 goals?
He's 25 goals and 38 assists.
25.
He has his chance to get 35 goals.
I was going
to
say, he'd have to hit 35 goals, keep it going. He's not going to win it. It's going to be Malkin. He's the best player, hands down, in the league this year.
Right. Spezza hasn't played with anyone this year.
He should be in the conversation. He's not going to win it.
Who would you have ahead of him?
Gino.
Lundqvist, maybe?
This is another discussion. I don't like goalies in the Hart Trophy mix.
See, this is like baseball, right? With like pitchers in the MVP discussion. Justin Verlander just won MVP. A lot of people thought it should have been Jose Bautista.
What's the definition of MVP?
Yeah.
This discussion always goes.
Yeah. No, it's a valid point. But I think Lundqvist is having such a good year.
You're right. And
New York's,
you know,
exceeding expectations. People throw him in the mix.
Other than him, I'm not scared of the Rangers. If the Senators are playing the Rangers in the playoffs.
It depends on what they do at deadline day, too.
That's true.
Because if they get a Nash, then yeah, things can change in an awful hurry.
Two pretty good wingers.
Okay, so you have Gino. Giroux is probably going to be in the conversation. Pronger's hurt. It was supposed to be a rebuild,
sick
retooling
flow
here. Bruce Gallo's playing like shit, and they're still in the thick of things.
Spotlight for 24/7, where everyone became to love him.
Exactly. Jason Spezza doesn't have that luxury. Same thing with Lundqvist. He plays in New York. He's going to get the media buzz. Is there anybody out west who you could point to and say, oh, yeah, he's Datsyuk, maybe? Taves was having a good first half. Now Chicago's slumping. He's kind of falling off the mark.
No one comes to mind.
Stamkos is having a great statistical season in Tampa Bay. They're floundering.
It's Genos.
I think Parise has been fantastic this year. Kovalchuk, too. Kovalchuk's had a ridiculously good year.
Big week, too.
Yeah.
Too bad Spets is only playing two games this week. Because if he was playing one more, I'd say for sure first out of the week. Not that that really matters in the long run, but be nice for him. 7 points, two games.
All right, man. So it's getting out of the time. We've been talking about everything, going on a number of different tangents. And, yeah, I'm sure the listeners are like, all right, when are you guys wrapping this up? So thanks for coming on the show again, man. I appreciate having you. We'll have to do this again soon. I think I might even come back in here on Sunday because I think Tim's in town. So if you want to come in, I'd love to have you.
Sunday, you usually do the afternoon, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'll
maybe
be
like 1 o'clock
67s
or so.
And a couple other things on the go. I won't be able to do Sunday.
All right.
Thanks for the invite.
Hey,
we'll
man,
do
no,
a deadline
no, no,
show.
And no worries. Yes, we have to do that. We did that a couple of years ago, and it was fun. We can dissect which GM blew it for his organization for the next 3 years.
We could talk about it right before. right before. That way we know who's buyers, who's sellers, or we have a better idea. And then right after, we can be the experts who called all the shots.
Exactly. Exactly. It'll be like Kyle Turris all over again. Anyways, man, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. Listeners, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you soon.